This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
FM News Talk 97.1 Podcast.
And if Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, Donald Trump for the last 2 years had complete sway, they wouldn't have just changed policy, which is nice. They would have hurt people in my community. Literally doing policies that could cause people's death.
Cory Booker.
The drama. Yeah. The drama.
He's, yeah, it is very dramatic with him on a regular basis.
I am Spartacus! Spartacus!
Every time I go back and think about the Spartacus line, this is the closest I've ever been to an I am Spartacus moment. Cory, an I am Spartacus moment's pretty big deal.
Mm-hmm.
A, I don't think you get to pre-name your I'm Spartacus moment and be like, hey, here it is, folks. It's going to happen right now. Circle the wagons. Watch this.
Seriously, the most dramatic person.
But this is the interesting thing. Go outside and ask the first 100 people that you see what his I am Spartacus moment was and see how many could tell you what it was.
Mm-hmm. It's forgettable.
You know, when you have a Spartacus moment, you should speak for itself.
Which Leave is it why up you to the public decide.
Yeah, which is why you don't tell people that it's happening. Oh, aren't we getting exhausted with the drama, to use Katie's word, that surrounds all of this? It is March of 2019.
Oh my gosh.
Holy smokes, folks. I mean, we haven't even gotten started yet in the 2020.
And there's 17.
Election.
Aren't there 17 Democrats running?
Oh, I don't even count them.
I mean, holy cow.
I'll remind you that the Republicans in the primary were plentiful.
Yes.
And very different. And I will also remind you that the least likely candidate, in my opinion, at this point in time, I think he officially came out as a candidate in like May, maybe Trump. I don't know. But when you consider where the Republicans were in this process, it's like the teenage years of the whole process of becoming a president. It's where you're like really trying things out, and you're going to experiment a little bit with socialism. This is why you don't let teenagers vote. And, well, 16-year-olds, I should say. And you are saying crazy things to try to get a reaction. It's more important to be known and be popular than to have any sense in your head. This is adolescence in the Democratic primary. It's kind of painful to watch. Kind of interesting to see what they're going to do next. And when you continue to have people like Cory Booker talk about how the Republican policies under Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, and Donald Trump, if they had like the free-for-all, would cause death on people. Oh, Lord.
And I'm ready to skip over the crap and get to the good parts of where these people are going to be, for lack of a better term, eating each other alive. I'm ready for that.
Let's talk about the party that causes death. Let's talk about abortion. Let's not. It's Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. I mean, here's an interesting, which I touched on this yesterday just a little bit. An interesting study was done. I think it was with Wisconsin voters. Maybe it was Wisconsin college students. It doesn't matter. They said that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is the face of the Democratic Party. You've got all of these people running to be the president of the United States. You've got a woman leading the House of Representatives as the Speaker of the House, Madam Speaker. And they're like, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, that's the future of the Democratic Party. That should make a lot of people who can't stomach the president, maybe have voted for Republicans in their lifetime, but don't want to identify as a Republican and can't find a rational voice in the Democratic primary so far. That should make you pretty nervous. Listen.
Like, why are so many grown men just obsessed with this, like, 29-year-old?
I mean, like, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
They're like, obsessed with me. Why are you so obsessed with me? She doesn't even go here.
She doesn't even go here.
I can't stop making references from Mean Girls, and it's not lost on me that maybe 90% of you haven't seen the movie, but it's a great movie.
I'm going to pull some drops so that you can have those
so
and introduce
this
audience to that movie.
I mean, it's a popularity contest at this point in time. Nobody's voting on anything. Like you said, these individuals are going to have to go at each other's throats and out-socialist one another in primary debates before we actually get something spit out to the American public for the new face of the Democratic Party. Joe Biden's talking about having failed candidate Stacey Abrams be his running mate. It's a interesting choice. And if you're somebody, you know, this is a Tony Flip test moment, because when we are watching the Michael Cohen testimony in front of the House, and somebody, well, they're talking about how racist the president obviously is, and you've got a black female that works for the president present who speaks on behalf of how untrue that actually is, the Democrats get to call her a token, which is the most offensive thing that I could ever think of coming out of somebody's mouth, is to suggest tokenism because somebody spoke up and happens to be a specific color or gender. That's what happens when the Republicans have a person of color speak up to say that Republicans aren't upset to be around people of color. And then if the Democrats do it, it'll be lauded as some sort of really groundbreaking move to try to get more diversity into the White House. I'm actually more for the championing of people being qualified for positions and understanding that the reason that they are there is because they are the right person for the job, that they are the person who can contribute the best under the circumstances. And if that person happens to be a white male, fine. If Joe Biden's your best shot at beating Donald Trump, you'd be dumb not to pick Joe Biden. If you're more invested in making sure that some demographical boxes are checked before you progress with picking a nominee, you should just say right now that white men need not apply. You should tell everybody right now that we are not going to go forward with this as the Democratic Party. But if you're going to have a white man who's going to lead the charge, like a Beto O'Rourke, how are they going to be able to do that in the midst of this constant call, this prioritization of diversity over qualification or experience? I mean, I would rather the country be run by all black females if black females were the ones who were the most qualified for the job. It makes me no difference what the person who is in the office or in the elected position or serving in the cabinet, it makes me no difference what demographics they are. Many people would suggest that Republicans only want to see white males. Nope, not me. I'm fine. Put Condoleezza Rice in there every day, twice on Sunday. This is what Beto had said the other day.
As a white man in this country, there are a set of circumstances that are different than they are for women, than they are for people of color. We won't become the country that we're supposed to be. We won't fulfill our promise until opportunity is shared equally, regardless of differences of gender, of race, of country of national origin, of how long your family's been here, or whether your family just got here yesterday. That's the promise of America.
You know, you can see, people suggest that the Democrats are the party of diversity, that they're for diversity. Republicans are equally for diversity. They just don't think that that needs to be the overarching leading qualification for anything, really. It should never, ever, ever hold anyone back. But why would you want that to push you to the front of the line? I can say, being female, that I think that there are moments in time where it is harder to be a female than it is to be a male in an industry or in a relationship, whether it's a romantic relationship or any type of professional relationship. There are times where, I mean, it's different. Whether you could suggest that it is or isn't harder, I would say that at times it is. But the point is, I would never, as a female, want to be given something specifically. Well, you know, we've got these five people here, but since Annie's a girl, let's give it to her. Like, who wants that? Mm. Don't you want to know that when you go into a scenario that you are the most qualified or the mm-hmm. best to be able to take that over? I think that's the way we all want to be. Gabe Pfeiffer is going to be in studio with us in the 2 o'clock hour as Tim Jones continues to sun himself on the beach. And so we invited Gabe to join us in the 2 o'clock hour. I'll ask him about this too. He's black and he's conservative and he's Christian and he has a great voice and he puts it all together for you on YouTube. St. John the Philosopher on YouTube. Go subscribe to his channel there. And we'll have him in at 2 o'clock through the whole hour and he'll just participate with us. We'll continue to take phone calls and all that. We're going to listen to Rodney Davis, was in our studio yesterday. We're going to listen to him here in just a second. As soon as we come back, really interesting conversation with Congressman Davis. He's my congressman, about the John McCain situation, which, wow, you guys really showed up in force mm-hmm. on that poll, almost 1,000 votes.
That is incredible.
Poll. And it ended up being just about 60%. Let's see here. I can refresh it. Just about 60% said that Trump should stop talking about John McCain. So I'm going to probably put up another poll here in just a second as well. So 59% out of about 1,000 votes, just 11 short of 1,000 votes, 59% Trump should stop. So this issue isn't like, this is not a decisive result, but the majority of you say that he could really stop talking about John McCain and you'd be happy with that. And I think that's really interesting. I'm going to talk to Gabe Pfeiffer about that as well. We asked Rodney Davis about it yesterday, and he had an interesting thought line on that. So we're going to hear from him in just a minute. Also, we're going to talk at 1240 with Hans von Spakovsky with the Heritage Foundation. All this talk about the Electoral College and ridding the nation of this problematic Electoral College thing. Hans is going to weigh in on that. I cannot wait to have that conversation at 1240. So stay tuned. A lot more coming your way. In a minute.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show.
Welcome back to The Annie Fry Show. Yesterday, we were grateful to have Congressman Rodney Davis in studio with us, and we wanted to give you an opportunity to hear that in case you missed it. Here it is. Congressman Rodney Davis, you've made a name for yourself in a very unconventional way. Tony, do you want to talk to him about Nickelback before we get to the lesser
about,
important
I'll
things?
Talk to him about anything else.
You can take him outside and talk to him about it.
I like everything about the congressman except his love for Nickelback.
So tell me, Congressman, since you came out on the House floor and defended Nickelback and oppressed Nickelback fans everywhere,
there are a lot of us.
Is this something that is a recurring thing for you now?
You know, I didn't think it was going to be this big when I did it.
It's great, though.
Yeah, you know, if you got to take a step back, look at what was happening at the time. I was leading the opposition to a 700-page bill that was just a disaster. Put your tax dollars and corporate money into congressional campaign coffers, something that's just terrible. But it was the Democrats' idea. One of the amendments was my buddy Mark Pocan, a Democrat out of Wisconsin. Mark offered this amendment on the census and how do we count them for redistricting purposes if they're in prison. And then he had the audacity to criticize Nickelback. And I said,
so you're saying he started it?
You darn right he started it. He'll admit it. And I stood up, you know, we're joking around and I stood up, defended Nickelback and he and I had a great, debate on the floor. And the thing about it is I hope it showed a lot of people that we actually do get along.
Mm-hmm.
It was a long day. I did it. I didn't think it'd be this big, but it was pretty funny.
Yeah, it's great. As soon as that happened, I told Katie, I'm like, the next time we talk to Rodney Davis, there has to be Nickelback. And then we forgot about that, so I had to go whisper something.
No, I thought like, they were like, I'm like, what are you guys whispering about earlier?
It was about Nickelback, because it's the only safe way to talk about Nickelback.
Hey, you know, if you want a hilltop mansion and 15 cars.
We also just want to be Nickelback stars. So we've been talking a lot about this today, and I wanted to get your thoughts and opinions on it, being someone who is on the Hill and sees the inside a lot more than any of us do, for sure. But President Trump, we've found out a little bit more about John McCain's involvement in the dossier. We know that there's a lot of tension that existed between John McCain and Donald Trump before John McCain passed, and that has not subsided at all. President Trump is bringing John McCain's name up. And the question I've asked our listeners, and they can vote on the poll on Facebook.com/AnnieFryShow, is, does the president need to stop talking about John McCain? I'll ask you the same thing.
The president needs to stop talking about John McCain in the sense that he's been talking about John McCain. What he ought to talk about is the dossier. What he ought to talk about is how that dossier has been disproven, even as recently as Michael Cohen coming in front of the House Judiciary Committee, our Oversight Committee, and admitting he's never been to Prague, which was one of the basic tenets of that whole disproven dossier. And when he criticizes John McCain, it takes away from the facts at hand that I think the president needs to help us get out there. You know, maybe the president needs to listen to a little more Nickelback. He'll calm down a little bit. And instead of being so personal with McCain, we might be able to talk about some of the really good things that are happening in our country. Historic economic growth, 4% unemployment. Otherwise, it gets overshadowed by this debate with somebody who's passed away. But it's no different than, you know, the Democrats were real proud of their bill that they passed the other day. H.R. 1 that I was arguing against. And one of them, the Democrats, told me that their messaging was all screwed up because we had a debate about Nickelback.
It got clouded.
Distractions.
Yeah. So let's talk about, you know, you said he could focus on the good things. I have personally, I have an arc on my support for this president. Maybe the last guy out of the primary that I would have chosen for myself. I really liked Marco Rubio, still like Marco Rubio.
Yeah, I endorsed him.
But yeah, and when you see what the president has been able to do, not what he promised or said he was going to do as candidate, but seeing what he's been able to do as president, I'm very impressed with the success that this administration has been able to accomplish, having the majority in both houses before 2018. What are those things that you wish the president would focus on talking about?
Well, you are dead on. You know, look, I wasn't a fan of the president's early in the primary. I was a Marco Rubio supporter, endorsed Marco. But I agree with you. This president, since I've had a chance to meet him and had a chance to work with him and his administration, we've seen very good things happen in this country. We've seen us reinvest in rebuilding our military. We've seen our economic standards in this country and our economy grow at levels that were even laughed at by liberal economic gurus before we passed a tax bill not too long ago. We see historic low sustained unemployment at 4% or below. These are the things the president needs to talk about. And unfortunately, when he gets sidetracked, the message gets sidetracked, the American people will lose sight of many of the positive things that are happening right around us. I'm with you on the president. My support for him is on an arc. I've got a chance to meet him. He's a very funny guy in person. He's got a great sense of humor. He's easy to talk to, and his administration's easy to talk to, which unfortunately is not the perception, but the perception of the Obama administration was they were open to anyone, come on by, and that is the furthest thing from the truth from my point of view.
Yeah, that is an interesting perspective on the issue. You know, we both said that we supported Marco Rubio initially, and Marco Rubio, along with Senator Roy Blunt, voting against the president's national emergency. Some people are suggesting, Chuck Schumer himself suggested that maybe some Republicans are starting to come around to this president and stand on the right side of history or whatever. My question to you, the Republican Party, especially in the House of Representatives, being the minority right now under the president and with the majority in the Senate, how do you feel about the representation of the Republican Party in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I really like it when Chuck Schumer tries to lecture Republicans on standing for the right time in history. Does that mean that he, because he stood against our tax cuts, that he was against historic economic growth and he was against historic low unemployment? I mean, it's just, that's why Chuck Schumer's always, you know, always going to be the way he is. Look, in the House, I voted differently than Senator Rubio and others. I believe there is a national emergency at the border, although I will admit there was part of me that thought about voting the other way because I don't like executive actions. I want Congress to work. I want our branches of government, equal powers to work. But I got a text from my colleague, Adam Kinzinger, who was flying a mission for the Wisconsin National Guard during the time we were voting. And Adam said, if I was there, I would vote for it because here's what I see.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me be completely in favor of making sure that this was declared a national emergency.
I saw Representative Kinzinger's reaction to this, and we were fortunate to have him on the show and listen to him explain what he was seeing and how it's a serious problem. It needs to be addressed. Senator Sass was just saying recently that while he wishes that the president wouldn't do that, that's different than whether or not the president has the right to do it. And I kind of appreciated that because it was the understanding that if the executive authority is there for him to do it and you don't like that, then it's up to the lawmakers to make the change, not to try to restrain the president from doing something that he's constitutionally authorized to do.
Right. And we had plenty of bipartisan compromises in the past year that Democrats could have worked with us on that would have provided the border security that I think we need, but also would have provided the changes to our immigration system that many Democrats have asked for years.
Congressman, don't have time to break each one of these topics down.
Do you want me to break them down into a Nickelback song?
Yeah, please do. Please do. But how short-sighted, if you believe that they are truly being short-sighted, which I do, are the Democrats being when they are talking about things right now like eliminating the Electoral College, adding judges to the Supreme Court, putting term limits on the Supreme Court, lowering the voting age to 16, all of these things that they've been throwing out there recently. I find it short-sighted. What do you think?
Oh, it's all politics. Democrats always amaze me. When they lose elections, it isn't because they take a step back and wonder if they need to put better candidates up. What happens is they want to change the rules. That was the reason why, you know, I was so adamantly opposed to H.R. 1, this huge 700-page takeover of our election process by the Democrats that was sold to the American people under the guise of getting money out of politics, but instead in ingesting billions of taxpayer dollars into congressional campaigns. Nobody, and I mean nobody, listening to your show, nobody I've ever represented has come to me and said, hey, you know what? I want my tax dollars to go to your campaign so we can spend more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Democrats' solution.
Mm.
And that's how they view the world compared to us, which is why I think that, you know, which is why I think we continue to win elections.
Congressman, you serve in the United States House of Representatives, but you're my representative in District 13 in Illinois. I have to ask you a little bit about the state of Illinois. I mean, if anybody wants to see a petri dish of massive, almost unfettered Democratic control and policy, they just need to look towards Illinois to see it. HB 2495, I've been talking a lot about, which is the most progressive abortion access bill that we would have in the country. Repealing parental notification, progressive income tax, which will be an income tax raise for everybody. It goes on and on and on and on. I was watching State Representative Alan Skillicorn say he came out of committee yesterday. They want to tax rain. It's a little more nuanced than that, but for the most part, it's a rain tax. You're representing people in Illinois, and people tell me all the time, why do I stay? Why do you stay?
Well, because it's a great state, and the potential is there. Illinois is a great state, great communities. I love my the district I serve and in my hometown. It's frustrating.
Can it get better?
Oh, it has to.
I mean, it can't get much worse. Sorry, folks.
You got to think about things. I mean, look, this is what you have when you have unfettered Democratic control. Governor Rauner made a mistake when he allowed for taxpayer funding to pay for abortions in our Medicaid system.
Yes.
He made he put himself in a political, he put himself in political peril and was not able to win re-election, mainly because of that and other issues that his administration faced. The problem we have is Democrats have super majorities, but now it's their fault. Everything, they own everything. They don't need a Republican to agree with them on any piece of legislation that goes in front of them. And they're going to pay the political price when they continue to put crazy ideas forward, mm-hmm. like making the New York abortion law seem conservative.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes me nauseous as somebody who's pro-life to see the debate on how to ensure that we reduce the number of abortions in this country versus unfettered access to what I consider infanticide in many cases.
Mm. So HB 2495 is no restrictions on abortion. They want to require insurance companies to pay for these abortions. They want to remove the partial birth abortion ban. You are a representative, but you have a representative in Springfield as somebody who lives in the state of Illinois. And I'm not sure what district you fall in, but you represent me and my state representative is a Democrat. So these Southern Illinois residents who you represent, who are potentially represented by a Democrat in Springfield, if you could send a message to those Democratic representatives in Springfield on something like HB 2495, what kind of advice would you give them?
I would talk about how this is a very personal issue. I don't know when access to abortion became the debate about women's health, because I've got a lot of community health centers that federal funds go into that provide great services to those who need access to women's health care and prenatal health care, et cetera. We've got to change the debate. And those who believe like you and I do, Annie, they've got to reach out. Whether your state representative and state senator is a Republican or a Democrat, call them. And if they're a Republican, they're on your side. They need to know you're with them.
Do those contacts matter?
Absolutely, they matter. My state rep, where I live in Taylorville, was the youngest state representative in the history.
And she's pregnant.
And she's pregnant now.
Yep, Avery Bourne.
And when I met Avery as an intern for my previous boss, John Shimkus, and then she worked for me on my campaign, she was a 21-year-old college student working with me, and proudly on the back of her Ford Escape was, I vote pro-life.
Amen.
We're just about out of time, but I wanted to ask you, actually, both of you a question. Mm-hmm. Being a Missouri resident who covers a lot of news that happens in Illinois, and we talk about it a lot here on Annie's show, Congressman, you just said that eventually the Democrats are going to pay the price if they continue to run to the left. When? Where's that line? How much further do they have to go before you think that the people of Illinois, particularly obviously Northern Illinois and the Chicago area, say, enough's enough. This is silly. We got to get back to some common sense.
Well, if there's a focus on continuing to raise taxes without reducing spending in Illinois, the Democrats will pay the price in the high-cost suburban areas. The property tax rate, the overall tax rate, the cost of living is going to continue to rise, and they'll pay a price if folks feel they can't afford to pay that tax rate, if they don't feel like they're getting a benefit out of paying more. In downstate Illinois, I think if they continue to go left on issues like the Second Amendment, on issues like life and the economy, that's what's going to have an impact on voters. If there are no jobs available in areas for teenagers to be able to work because the minimum wage has been raised so much that companies that would have given skills to our next generation of workers are going to be forced to automate, that's going to be a problem for Democrats in the future, in my opinion.
Well, thank you so much, Congressman Davis, for giving us some time today. Representative of District 13, my district, it's always great to be able to speak to your representative, and especially in this way. It's fantastic.
And it's great to see you like Nickelback.
I don't have a problem with them. I don't understand all of the invested time and effort into hating them so much.
I don't either.
It's kind of funny to play it and watch them all come out of the woodwork. So here we go.
Keep playing them.
Congressman Rodney Davis, thanks so much. So good to have him in studio yesterday. 971talk.com/Annie for that interview and all of the interviews that we do. They're all right there on the website. When we come back, Hans von Spakovsky with the Heritage Foundation is going to join us, and he's going to talk to us about nixing that old pesky electoral college thing. Should we get rid of it? Good grief, obviously. We'll be right back with Hans in a minute.
And it must have been so bad.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show.
Senator Warren, Elizabeth Warren, had a town hall last night, and she said that she thinks we should do away with the Electoral College. Do you agree with that?
I think that I'm open to the discussion. I mean, there's no question that the popular vote has been diminished in terms of making the final decision about who's the president of the United States, and we need to deal with that. So I'm open to the discussion.
Kamala Harris, a candidate for president of the United States, just joining in the crowd on the left, suggesting that the Electoral College needs some work, if not complete and total elimination. This among a lot of other proposals by the Democrats, how to remake the Supreme Court, to change the voting age. They have a lot of issues with our electoral process right now and how things are comprised in our government. And here to talk about it, an expert on the subject, Hans von Spakovsky with Heritage Foundation. Hans, thanks so much for coming on the show today. It's great to speak with you.
Sure. It's great to be back with you.
So when you hear all of this hubbub about the Electoral College and how problematic it is, what's your immediate reaction?
How completely ignorant so many people, especially Kamala Harris and others, are of why our founders put in an Electoral College. They really just don't understand the way our republic was organized. And look, the main reason, Annie, that when at the Constitutional Convention they decided to do this was because they said, look, if candidates for president are elected based on a national popular vote, then what are they going to do? They're just going to go to the big cities, the big urban areas, and campaign there, and they're going to ignore the more rural, less populated areas of the country. That is just as true today as it was then. You know, under the Electoral College system, no matter how small the state is, no matter how small the population, they're going to get at least a minimum of 3 Electoral College votes. Now, look, it's very true. Candidates still spend a lot of time in the bigger states. But a candidate can win by convincing people in the rest of the country, you know, what liberals on the East Coast like to call flyover country,
right,
to vote for them. And all you have to do to realize that is take a look at the last presidential election and the way the country broke down. And look, urban areas just constantly get bigger. And if we switch to this national popular vote system, eventually the candidates will just keep ignoring those rural areas of the country.
You know, Elizabeth Warren was having this conversation with folks at that town hall in Mississippi. Mississippi's got 6 Electoral College votes. She's trying to make the case to those Mississippians on how each vote needs to count. Is Elizabeth Warren going to be spending time in Mississippi if she gets the Democratic nomination for those 6 Electoral College votes? I mean, are those votes going to matter more to Elizabeth Warren if the Electoral College went away than if we had it in place?
No. In fact, she would ignore Mississippi, and she would just go to the big cities like New York and Los Angeles, and she wouldn't show up there. Look, the other thing about this that I think they just don't understand is that the other reason for doing this, according to the framers, was that they wanted someone running for president not to win a national election, but to win a series of regional elections. And the purpose of that is to make sure that the person that wins basically represents a broader swath of the American people. And by having to go to all these different states to try to win basically in the different regions, the South, the Midwest, the West Coast, the East Coast, I think you get that. Look, the other thing about this is, oh my goodness, you know, people look back at the 2000 election and the recount in Florida, and the chaos it produced. Going to a national popular vote system would be, it would be like a cyclone. Because what would happen is, imagine Florida 2000 in every state in the country, in every county in every state in the country. Because if you're going to have a recount, obviously, if the recount depends on every single vote, not just Electoral College votes,
right,
you're going to have to do the recount all over the country, everywhere.
That process would never end. It would be perpetual. So when you hear all these suggestions, people talk about, well, I'm open to, you know, suggestions. I'm open to the discussion. Would you say there's anything that could be improved on the Electoral College process, or did they get it right when they put it in place the first time?
No, I think they got it right, and here's the proof of that. We are one of the most stable democracies, a republic actually, in the history of civilized humankind, and we have been peacefully handing over the keys of power every 4 years or every 8 years for our entire history, and for the past, you know, 60, 70 years as the most powerful country in the world. Compare that to the instability in so many other parts of the world, the coup d'etats, the kind of problems you have. You don't change that, or you don't change a system that has produced that kind of political stability without having a very, very good and sound reason for doing that, and nobody has come up with that yet.
And that's a great point. I want to highlight something that you just said there, and it might sound like civics 101, but I think that we're probably lacking in civics 101 often in our day-to-day conversations. But you highlighted that we are a republic and not a democracy. Can you just give us the most basic explanation of what that means?
Well, we don't directly decide on the laws that are going to be passed by the federal government. We elect individuals, legislators, to represent us. And we do that at every level, from local city councils and county commissions to state legislatures to the federal government. And that's also part of why we have that electoral college system. For people who don't remember it, you know, each state gets the number of electoral college votes of the two folks they have in the Senate and the number of members of the House of Representatives that they have, and that's your electoral college vote. By the way, I mean, here's another thing people should remember. If we go to a national popular vote system, you're going to have numerous folks running for president, and it means that, in essence, somebody could win the presidency not with a majority vote of the American people, but with multiple candidates. You could have somebody who wins with 35% of the vote, 25% of the vote. Can you imagine someone with 25% of the vote trying to govern for 4 years when the majority of the American people didn't vote for that person, and everybody's going to question and say, you don't have a mandate to do anything?
Yeah, well, you know, it goes kind of towards the majority of the votes that came in went to Hillary Clinton in 2016. The Electoral College resoundingly went towards Donald Trump, and that's ultimately how we elect our presidents. I had a caller just the other day say, majority rule, there's nothing more American than that. And I think it's important to understand that there were a lot of things put in place to make sure that the majority couldn't lord itself over the entire country when our government was formed. The majority doesn't always get to rule in the United States.
No, that is absolutely right. That caller should Google tyranny of the majority. Because if he does, he's going to find a lot of discussions, including in the Federalist Papers and elsewhere, that was what the framers feared. And that's why, for example, why do folks think that we have a United States Senate where each state gets two votes no matter how big they are or how small they are? Well, the whole purpose of that was to make sure that the big states with the most population, in other words, the majority, could not basically rule the country and ignore the views and opinions of the smaller states and the less populated areas.
I got like 30 seconds here, but since you brought that up, I have to ask you. We've seen people suggest that the senator should be elected by a majority rule. We've seen states suggest that they should change the way their senators are picked. This majority rule Senate vote thing, isn't that kind of go against the bicameral Congress as it was originally intended?
Yeah, I think we definitely should not have senators switching to being picked. The number of senators you have according to your population, just like the House of Representatives. I mean, I think that's just a foolish idea.
Well, we appreciate your time here, as always, and it's definitely a hot topic among people who are running and our listeners, so your insight is very valued here. Thanks, Hans. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yep, we'll talk to you again soon. Hans von Spakovsky with the Heritage Foundation on that Electoral College conversation. It is so important to understand the intricacy of what was set up to take care of us, the people, and not make it some sort of separate ruling class versus the little people. Majority doesn't always rule. That is American. We'll be right back.
Get more at 971talk.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.